Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the March 29, 2020 session, focusing on Ezekiel 37, verses 1 through 14. Breathe. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Daniel Glaze.
And I'm Bert Montgomery.
Okay, so most of our listeners, I think, know we record these in advance. It's not hugely in advance, but it's in advance. And this one is being recorded on Thursday, March 12th. And I'm noting that because events are changing so rapidly right now. Each day brings new news, new closures, new worries, new reasons for us to care for one another. It's an interesting time in which we live. And I don't know what Bert is going to say in his intro, and I don't know what we're going to talk about, but I know that the COVID-19 virus and all the effects of it upon our lives and our society and our churches, and even the questions that it raises for our faith, that all those things are on our mind as we are recording and probably as you are listening. And frankly, by March 29, we don't know what the world's going to look like then either. What else will happen? And if we're honest, it's always that way in our lives. We don't know what the future will hold. We don't know what the next day will bring, but we are called to live faithfully toward it and to treat each other decently on the way. So know that we are aware and that we hope that this podcast, and certainly with the scripture we're going to be looking at today, has some special and helpful meaning and words for all of us in this season. So with that in mind, Bert, would you help us get started?
Yes, and I want to say that, again, it does seem kind of, some of the things I may talk about makes me a little odd, but we'll do this. Yeah. And I'm going to start just by saying that I have always loved stories about ghosts and ghouls, zombies, the undead, and generally anything involving skeletons. I love old horror movies, of course, but I also love the first of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, and there's lots of skeletons in that movie. The Corpse Bride, it's one of my three favorite Tim Burton movies. And of all my favorite Pixar movies, which include, of course, Up, The Incredibles, and Inside Out, I think Coco may mean the most to me. Now, so you won't be surprised then when I say that of all my favorite stories from our Holy Scriptures, this one from Ezekiel has always been among my all-time favorites. It probably started as a kid with the wild images in my mind as my dad would sing and teach me to sing the great old song about the ankle bones connected to the leg bone, right? Mm-hmm. So Ezekiel's vision of the valley of... we're going to have a sing-along now. Sing-along with Faith Lab. Faith Element, sorry. Ezekiel's vision of the Valley of Dry Bones is, when it begins, a most terrible nightmare. You see, Ezekiel is a prophet of the exile. He is an exile prophet. The divided nations of Israel and Judah had both collapsed. The once united kingdom first split into two kingdoms, and then both of them fell. The Hebrew people were captured by foreign empires and taken from their homeland. Now, Amos, Isaiah, first Isaiah that is, Jeremiah and Micah, they're not in chronological order, this is in alphabetical order, they were all prophets sent by God to warn God's people of what was coming. And like all good prophets, they were able to see the inevitable outcome of the actions of the nation if the nation did not change its ways. The one kingdom of Israel became the two kingdoms of Israel, Israel and Judah, and then they were too easily seduced by the idols of their own making. They worshipped money and wealth, extravagant living, enormous power. And as always is the case then, as it is now, those things come at a terrible human cost and a tremendous cost to society as a whole. The poor grew poorer, the sick grew sicker, the exploited were exploited yet even more. And yet, all was done thinking that God was blessing it all. God's name was praised loudly and publicly, and great expenses went toward elaborate worship services to show everyone how godly they all were. They were highly religious in their language and in ritual, but they simply did not follow God's commandments. For the glory of God was a phrase that was shown to be completely empty because it was all done for their own egos and their own emotional satisfaction. All societies fall when the gap between the rich and the poor grows wider and wider and wider and wider. All societies, even the greatest empires in history, collapsed when runaway greed becomes the norm and caring for the stability of the masses is seen instead as enabling the lazy and undeserving. The kingdom of Israel split as a result of this, and then Israel and Judah both collapsed because of these things, according to the prophet. All the prophets warned that this was coming, but the nations refused to listen. The people of God eventually were driven out of their homeland. They were taken away from their temple, and they were scattered among other nations. And generations came and went, and more generations came and went, and more generations came and went. And the people of God had lost any sense of pride. They had lost all meaning and purpose and identity as a people. They no longer had access to the religious places where they would go to meet each other and to worship God, and they felt as though God had turned their back on them and abandoned them. They felt God had forgotten them, that they were finished as a people. The world had beaten them down, stripped them naked, sucked the very life from them, and left their remains to be picked clean by the economic, political, and military vultures from foreign lands until there was nothing left but dusty, dried-up bones. But God refused to give up on God's people. God refuses to give up on us as a people. In spite of the people's most determined efforts to do their own thing rather than doing God's thing, God stubbornly keeps seeking out his people. Ezekiel's vision places him in a valley of dead, dry bones upon dead, dry bones upon dead, dry bones. He's standing in the midst of, he's standing surrounded by, he's overwhelmed by the utter despair of death, of total lifelessness. And there God tells Ezekiel to preach. And Ezekiel does, and the bones come together. They start shaking. The bones on the ground start rattling and rolling together. Shake, rattle, and roll, the prophet Elvis once sang. And then God tells Ezekiel to preach some more. The wind of God, the breath of God. The Hebrew word is, and I'm not a Hebrew scholar, I'm going to mispronounce this, and I'm sorry to my Hebrew professor, Greg Earwood. The word is ruah. And you should hear Greg Earwood say it, which has a lot of depth of meaning, and we shouldn't try to simplify ruah to simply mean breath or wind, but it's more than that. It is that. The ruah moves into the bodies and the bones and regenerates the muscle and the flesh, and they all begin to stand up as a great multitude. And this is a powerful vision of hope that Ezekiel is having and then sharing for a people in total despair, that God is still present and God is there, that they can breathe. And with each breath of God, there is hope. And with each breath of God, there is life. Now, look, we are discussing this as the COVID 2019 pandemic continues to spread, and it continues to shut down the great cities of the world, including cities and towns, universities and elementary schools all across our country. Some of the things that we worship most right now, including the NCAA men's and women's basketball tournament, March Madness, all the energy, excitement, devotion, money, power, all the stuff that exceeds everything our best worship services can do inside our church buildings, that's canceled. Concern, very real concern about real people in our restaurants, in our stores, about our jobs, about our families. The economic fears are as great as the worries about simply catching the virus itself in our country and across the world. We have to make this journey of faith with faith and with courage, and we have to be committed to love our neighbors as we love ourselves. This is an opportunity for God's people to shine in ways we have failed to do so for so long. Yes, it's going to get dark. All the experts are saying it's going to get worse before it gets better. Heck, if you don't believe me, even faith healers are canceling their healing services. Y'all, it's that bad. But this vision of Ezekiel is, at its core, a story of hope. It is a story of hope that no matter how bad it gets, God will act again. God will restore us again. God will grant new life again. It's a story of grace that no matter how bad we have screwed everything up with our selfishness, with our refusal to pay attention, with our refusal to plan and build up structures for the good of everyone, God will continue to act on the world's behalf, because this is the world that God so loves. May the breath of God, the wind of God, the Ruah, blow through us now as we seek to serve, to encourage, and to love our people through this coming valley of cultural and social uncertainties.
Bert, that was an incredible introduction. That's much better than the first time I preached this passage. I stood in the pulpit and I said, y'all, this is my text. This is the text of preachers everywhere. You know, I stand before you week after week and try to preach to a bunch of dry bones. And would y'all believe that congregation didn't even get that joke? or maybe they did. And or probably they did. And didn't find it funny at all. But so I'll never forget that. That was that you could just about hear those crickets. Mm. But laying that silliness aside, I was so taken, Bert, with the way in which you wondered aloud, thought out loud for us, how even in the midst of this current trouble we're in, how might God's Spirit, feminine in the Hebrew, so we might ask, how might she be breathing new life into us? I don't mean this in a bad way. That's sort of one of those haunting, beautifully haunting questions. And as we were talking a couple minutes ago, I don't know that I have all the answers. One of the ways I think that God's Spirit, I hope and I pray God's Spirit breathes new life back into us during this pandemic and this trouble that we're in, is that I hope and I pray that we see that we are part of one another, that we are not just a bunch of individuals walking this earth, but that we mean something to one another, that our behavior has effects on one another, and that when one of us is sick, all of us are sick, and I hope that gives us a responsibility to take care of one another better than we have. I hope that we recover our sense of what it means to belong to one another, if that makes any sense, throughout all this.
Every time I read this text, I still get chills. There are passages in Scripture that I read that I've read them so often, I have to do a little work to kind of re-engage the imagination. Maybe the feeding of the 5,000 or Jesus turning water into wine. It takes a little work for me to kind of re-engage the beauty of those gospel messages. But every time I read this passage, it never fails to capture my imagination about what's possible. And it is always a reminder to me that because this world is God's world, there is always the potential for renewal and new life and new hope. And so I'll be honest, in the midst of all of this, I was so grateful to be reading it, to be letting it kind of seep into my anxious bones. particularly with everything going on. But in reality, no matter where we are when this podcast airs, if things have settled down or if things have gotten worse or if we're still kind of in the same place, it doesn't change the truth of this message, that there's always potential for new life. And I think that when I think about this passage and where Ezekiel was, who Ezekiel was prophesying to, people who were in one of the worst places they had ever found themselves in, it was just a vision. It wasn't something that actively was happening. They weren't actively finding themselves saved from exile. The truth of the matter is they still had quite a long time to suffer in exile. But this vision gives hope. And I guess I just wonder from y'all, what role does hope play in where we find ourselves now? And how do we hold on to it?
You know, Viktor Frankl, the Holocaust survivor, says that hope and meaning and purpose, those things come from the ability to imagine a different reality than the reality you are experiencing at this moment. Mm. Because the reality that you're experiencing at this moment, it may be all completely hopeless. And if you can't see a different reality, there's no reason to try. Right? So it's the ability to imagine a different world, a different way, and put yourself in that. That is hope, to get through what you're going through now and envision what might be and live toward that vision. And that's powerful. When you think about this coming from a man who survived, he survived the Holocaust, but he lost several family members to the Holocaust. I mean, that's powerful stuff based in real human experience for us as we go through difficult trials as a community, as a people, as a nation. Not to compare what's happening to the Holocaust, but, you know, this isn't some simple feel-good motivational poster. Right. This is based from real suffering.
Right.
This is coming from a place of real suffering.
Nikki, it's a great question, and particularly to the sense, I know my own self. Once those dry, rattling bones come back to life, that's when I want to preach. That's when I want to praise and celebrate. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But God says, no, you preach to those, prophesy to those dry bones. It's almost like, hold out the hope in the hopeless place. And that's really hard for me. I love what Brian Stevenson says about hope. You know, that he wrote the book Just Mercy, and they made that movie. And he lays it bare. He says, hope is a willingness to position oneself in a hopeless place and be a witness. That allows one to believe in a better future, even in the face of abusive power. That kind of hope makes one strong. And maybe it's the privilege of my existence. Maybe it's the experiences I've had. Maybe it's my own lack of faith. I find it hard to be hopeful in the hopeless place. Now, on the other side of that, when we come through okay, and I'll be the first to shake my tambourine, but before then, I don't know why I said that. Who knows?
I just want to see you shaking the tambourine now, Daniel.
Well,
we're going to need to make that happen.
That's right. Let us move on.
Everybody's got a mental image now.
That's right, of me shaking my tambourine. But in the midst of that, it is so easy to feel like we are in a hopeless place. That was a long way to say, I don't know.
Nikki, ask your question again.
Sure. No, I was asking, this passage for me has always been this epitome of hope. And I think that was the intent of the vision, to inspire that. And so, but it happened in the middle of, I mean, at this point in time, the Israelites have lost everything that gave them identity. They have lost their temple, they have lost their land, and they have lost the Davidic monarchy. All three of those things kind of came together to give these Israelites their identity. And all of that has been stripped away, and they find themselves in a different land, unable to worship as they are used to, and under the rule of a foreign government. It is a pretty hopeless place. And so I think Ezekiel seems to be saying that, or seems to be demonstrating, not even saying, but showing how important it is to hold on to hope in those spaces. And so I guess I'm kind of curious, how do you do that when everything feels like it's falling apart? And that can be on a grand scale, like we're experiencing right now with this pandemic, or it can be it can be on a smaller scale when a loved one dies, or when a marriage falls apart, or when we find out one of our a kid is addicted to drugs, or mm-hmm. How do we hold on? Where do we gain the ability to hold on to hope in the midst of that?
And I can't say I've ever been in that place. I've been in some bad places.
Sure.
Lost people. Wife has been in the hospital. Mm-hmm. Not sure if she was going to make it. Some pretty scary stuff. I the words of one of our professors, he teaches spiritual formation. I'm going to butcher the phrase, but he says, when life makes you anxious, when you are in anxious times, that embrace your curiosity, keep your curiosity close. And for me, what that does, and I think that's been, I'm an incredibly curious person to a fault. And I think for me, a place that is a gift is that I am curious, even though I may be angry, I may be frustrated, I may be, I'm a big worrier, boy, can I worry. But I am incredibly curious also about what might be next or what God might be at work doing. Or how might this story unfold? I don't know. I'm curious. Mm. And I think part of curiosity is keeping our mind open to possibilities, because we don't know, right?
Right.
We don't
right.
know if a loved one is going to make it from the hospital bed or not.
Right.
And they might not.
Right.
But, you know, people lose people, and they find a way to grieve and move on. And we are shaped by that experience of hardship and loss and suffering. And yet somehow, and I wonder about this for people like we were talking about that went through the Holocaust. I mean, how in the world do you hold any hope at all when you're in a concentration camp? I have no clue, none. And I don't know if you can stay curious in such a situation.
Right.
I don't know why this comes to mind, but I'm always struck by, you know, how often the psalmist in expectantly hoping for deliverance calls on the past. Mm-hmm. You know, Lord, you have, you have been our dwelling place for generations. I wonder about the power of memory, or the power to remember, that might cause us to have hope going forward. Do you know what I mean? That I wonder if we remember how God has always been with us.
Yes.
and has always been faithful, even if, you know, in spite of those difficult circumstances. Does that give us some hope for carrying on? I don't know. I hope so. I'm not sure what I'm getting at there, but that power of memory seems to, for me at least, provide something for carrying forward.
Well, I think that's very biblical. I mean, throughout the Hebrew scriptures, especially in the, yeah, through the Hebrew scriptures, that's a constant theme. Remember where you've come from. Remember what God has done. Not just the Psalms, but it's over and over again. And, you know, remember who we are. Remember who God is. And remember that God has done this over and over and over and over again. And the problem is, we always forget.
Yeah.
Right? We just forget.
As I'm listening to y'all, it occurs to me that, David, you thought about thinking forward, curiosity about what's possible. And Daniel talked about memory and remembering the ways that God has provided in the past. And so it occurs to me that maybe a part of hope has something to do with thinking beyond where we are in this very moment. That,
yes,
that there's always a possibility of newness and wellness and goodness. And we know that in the past there has been all of those things, even if they are not real right now.
And they might not be real for me. I mean, we bring such an individualistic lens to this. And that, I wanted to go back to what Daniel said at the very start, that he hoped that the experience of this episode we're in right now would perhaps lead us to value community more and our togetherness rather than mm-hmm. this individualism that we often bring.
Right.
Yeah. But we're doing the same thing with hope, right? I mean, can I be in an experience of suffering?
Yes.
And my hope is not, yes, I hope for me, but, you know, it may be bigger than that. It may be I hope for my kids or their grandkids or the world or the church or something bigger than me that goes beyond this individual. So, I mean, maybe embracing hope is also, because it wasn't like this vision wasn't just Ezekiel's bones, right? He was seeing an entire community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And again, thinking communally, sometimes my hope comes in when I am feeling hopeless. I know that there are people hoping for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
And when I can't hope for myself.
Yeah.
Someone else steps in to hope for me.
Mm-hmm.
I know I've done that for others, and I know they've done that for me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's so much here to unpack. What a wonderful passage. I thought maybe a fitting way to close would be to quote the words of that eminent theologian of hope, Jürgen Moltmann, who said this: "That is why faith, whenever it develops into hope, causes not rest but unrest, not patience but impatience. It does not calm the unquiet heart, but is itself this unquiet heart in man. Those who hope in Christ can no longer put up with reality as it is, but begin to suffer under it, to contradict it. Peace with God means conflict with the world. For the goad of the promised future stabs inexorably into the flesh of every unfulfilled present." Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about our Faith Element Bible study curriculum at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.